From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Tuesday night when Rochester City School District Superintendent Terry Dade announced some of his ideas for dealing with the district's problems with finances. You've probably heard that the district has been grappling with a hole of at least $30 million in the current year. Superintendent Dade announced he would not immediately cut teaching positions when we found out about that gap this past summer. The question was, though, how could the district solve the problem for the long term? And the superintendent says the solution is not going to be easy. The district has to put together plans based on solid, reliable projections. So he says it's got to be a better way of understanding what's coming in and what kind of funding the district has to deal with in the first place. Also, he has talked about cutting nearly 290 positions, including potentially dozens of teaching positions. The superintendent came on board in July. He's been dealing with this mess almost since day one of his tenure. And Dade says the problem is not just the current year. If the district relies on the same kinds of projections that led to that $30 million gap, it could double or worse. So how many teachers are we talking about? Well, the superintendent has talked about a total reduction in staff, which could mean the loss of about 168 teaching positions. Some of those cuts could happen through attrition or not filling vacancies, but there could also be layoffs. And the superintendent knows there will be debate about these issues. He joins us this hour to discuss it on Connections. Rochester City School District Superintendent Terry Dade, welcome back. Thanks for being
here. Thank you for
having me. So I'm clear right out of the gate here. This is not your budget. In fact, your budget, so to speak, doesn't come till late in the winter. But this is, it seems to me, the first look at how you think a framework needs to be laid to make the long-term financial situation better and more sound. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. So the original projections of $30 million was really a backwards look at the 18-19 school year. And, yep. And that was a really reliable number that remains true. Looking at poor budgeting practices for our current school year has led us to the state that we're in of looking at nearly $64 million that we need to find within this academic school year. So moving forward, it's how do you reliably budget, not try to play with numbers to get to a magic number to balance your budget, but really make hard decisions of adopting priorities and strategies that align with the goals that we've established as a district and move forward on stable ground.
Yeah, I remember, you know, and Terry, you're still new as of July to this community, but every community has its own issues on the governmental level with budgeting. And I remember for years and still going on in Monroe County, the question of how do you close the current year budget gap in a way that is long lasting as opposed to just using one shots and things like that. Is that what you're looking at, is creating a structure that says, okay, for 2019, 2020, 2021, and into the future, we're not doing this every year. Is that what you want to do?
Absolutely. So my what I'm committed to is not making this a Groundhog Day type scenario. We cannot face this again come next September that we find that we had poor budgeting practices heading into the 2021 budget year. I think this is the time to build the blueprint for our CSD financial stability. Some of the practices that we put into place now are only going to benefit us moving forward in the long term. So it is my hope that we lay the groundwork now for the hard decisions that need to be made in the future.
And I know that listeners want to know about teaching positions, and I want to get to that in just a moment. But first here, this may be a little less sexy, so to speak, but this is important. That $30 million gap, you say it could be 64, you're looking for $64 million. Why? Do you have a better sense now of how that gap got there in the first place?
Absolutely. So the $30 million from last year that I was confidently stating in October was a result of $22.4 million of overspend last year. In addition to, we balance this current year budget with $8 million of savings that does not exist. So poor budgeting practices, saying that we're going to come in and spend $7 million less than we actually spent for substitute costs is one example. $5 million less in healthcare costs when we historically see rising healthcare costs. So that's just poor budgeting practices. So the increased number is providing that same kind of scrutiny to this year's budget to say, based on five-year trend data, what should we have budgeted for all of our heavy-hitting budget items? And that's what's gotten me to the $64 million. If all things remain constant, it would be Groundhog Day, and we would be waking up to the same scenario in September 2020.
What was the overspent money spent on?
A myriad of factors. So we dipped into our fund balance, which is essentially our savings account. The top six items that we uncovered where the overspending occurred due to poor budgeting practices are things like our healthcare costs, retirement benefits, transportation, substitute costs, personnel in general, and then looking at tuition rates for charter, so under predicting how many students would actually be going to charter schools.
Okay. Who's responsible for the poor budgeting practices?
I believe it's a collaborative approach. That's the way I've led, so I haven't had the opportunity to really delve into what the past budgeting practices were with regards to building the budget. But the way it should run is our finance team takes the first stab at addressing any budget deficits that are predicted for the year. But it's also incumbent upon the superintendent at that time to put their eyes on the budget scenario and the like. And then our Board of Education as well. So it really should have been a collaborative approach, looking at trend data, looking at goals established by the district. And the key question I'm asking everyone to be mindful of this year, if we need increases in a particular area, where are we cutting? You can't just keep adding to funds that just do not exist. We've had declining enrollment and increased staffing for far too long, and we need to right-size the district at this point.
The reason I ask about responsibility is not to make it sort of a gotcha game, and I'm sure you come in here and the last thing you want to do is sort of be picking sides or factions, et cetera. The reason I ask is because, number one, the community votes on boards and wants to be able to hold people accountable if continued mistakes are made. And frankly, even though the superintendent is not voted on by taxpayers, people ought to be able to know at least what went wrong and who might have been behind it. Did your predecessor make mistakes in this regard?
Again, I wasn't part of that process. It's far too easy for me to point fingers sitting from where I am today. All I can say is there's things that I'm asking right now that may have been missed in the past. Things like, it doesn't take rocket science to look at historic five-year trend data and for me to articulate where we should come in with spending in our priority line items this year. And for some reason, unbeknownst to me, those figures were missed, which has put us in the spot that we're in today.
So let's talk about the position cuts. Tell me if these are right or wrong. Nearly 290 positions total, potentially 168 teaching positions. Some of the teaching positions could come through attrition or not filling vacancies, but there would also be some layoffs. Yes?
That's correct.
How many layoffs?
So that's still too early to call. What I am confident in is the figure that we're trying to reach move for closer to a stable budget this year is 9.74 million in staffing reductions. Where those staffing reductions occur with regards to administration versus central office versus teachers, paraprofessionals is the work that my team and I are doing right now, ultimately looking at minimizing the impact on our students in our classrooms each and every day.
One of the headlines that did not come out of Tuesday, and it could have just been either a misunderstanding or I don't know, because there's not a budget yet. But one thing we did not see is superintendent calls for cuts to administrative positions. It was a lot of talk about teachers, and that's where people of the community is always concerned. How many administrative and top-level positions ought to be cut?
So we are looking at all personnel areas, including administration. So when I say central office and even my executive cabinet, those are on the table as well. When we're talking about the numbers with regards to teachers, the community has to know that our primary numbers of employees come from our teaching ranks. When you're talking about securing a 9.74 million budget reduction,
you
could not do it without teachers. So while it's easy to say just cut administration, we also need our principals and other administrators to run our district as well. So it's not as easy as folks are making out. Of course, teachers are going to be our primary focus. They are our number one asset in our children's education once they walk through our school doors. And this is quite a predicament that we're in, facing a $64 million hole this school year.
Now, this past summer, when news breaks that this budget hole exists and people's jaws are on the floor, you know, fair or not, I think your first move was to reassure the community, look, we're not just going to cut a bunch of teaching positions tomorrow. You know, your kids are going to go to school and their teachers are going to be there. That's not going to be. And I understand that what you are doing with this framework is looking forward, but you're going to have some people say, hey, you said you weren't going to cut teachers at all here. And it feels like that's what you're doing. What do you say to that?
I just want to remind everyone that, you know, I was informed of this September 19th. I was able to address the community shortly thereafter. The number that we were looking at was 30.1 million with early indication and a backwards look at the 18-19 school year. With a budget our size, I was extremely confident that we would be able to find those reductions without touching staffing reductions. In my presentation this past Tuesday, my team did just that. We were able to recoup $28 million, which is very close to that $30 million number, without touching a single staffing reduction.
For this year?
For this year. What we didn't know back in October was the impact and the under-budgeting that was in our 19-20 school year. Had I known the total figure back in October, I would not have come out to say, you know, I'm confident that we could do this without staffing reductions. So again, we were able to hit the target without any staffing reductions with a rear view look into the 18-19 school year. By looking and being responsible to not have this occur at the end of this year, we have to make some tough decisions. Otherwise, we are going to continue to show our financial instability and poor decision making in our current year.
Do you regret making those comments about not cutting teachers?
Absolutely not. So at that time, I was speaking from my heart. I'm very analytical. So when I looked at the numbers and line items of what I had already studied in my budget, I knew that I could come very close to that figure without touching teachers. What I learned in the ensuing 3 weeks following was absolutely heartbreaking to me. To say that we were having the same exact issues in our current budget year, when all I knew coming into this position was that we had a balanced budget. Little did I know that we had under-budgeted to the tune of 30 to 34 million coming in. So absolutely heartbreaking in my opinion. But I wouldn't change anything from what I said that day. I was speaking from my heart that I knew and was confident that I could avoid reductions when we were looking at 30 million. Much different story when we're staring down the barrel of 64 million.
Sure. And so how did you and your team close 28 million for this current year?
We looked at lots of efficiencies. So I keep talking about substitute costs. That is not because our teachers are calling out anymore or the like. We have certain structures and policies in place that are contributing to that very large number. I've already put out guidance and directives to our staff to avoid and mitigate us having that same problem again. So we're going to recoup quite a bit with regards to substitute costs. Cutting back on professional development, looking at extended learning programs, which are after school programs, summer school, and the like. All of those are things that are beneficial to our students, but they aren't must-haves. In our current situation, we had to make those reductions, and those types of reductions away from the classroom really got us to that 28 million.
Some listeners are asking if, you know, the previous administration working with the teachers association hired too many teachers to begin with. Do you think they did?
Again, my rear view look is we should have been seeing staffing reflect our student enrollment. So historically in Rochester City School District, we've seen declining enrollment and increased charter enrollment. We have not seen the same parallel with regards to staffing in the district. So I do believe that there should have been reductions in the past years. Not to say that we wouldn't all want more. But we have an obligation to stay within our budget and make sure that our priorities are aligned, that we're not dipping into our savings each and every year to the tune of $20 million to fill a budget gap. So I do believe we should have made reductions in the past years.
And I think we've got some of the comments made by the president of the Rochester Teachers Association, Adam Urbanski. It should come as no surprise to the community that Mr. Urbanski does not want any teaching cuts. And I understand why. I don't think the superintendent wants teaching cuts. I don't think any parent wants teaching cuts. Again, it's a question of what are you going to do about this? And can you realistically do this any other way? Well, Adam Urbanski had this to say when he talked to Randy Gorbman this morning. And I think we've got three comments. Rob, let's just play them all in order, and you can just put them right back to back to back. This is Adam Urbanski talking to Randy Gorbin from WXXI News.
I feel for him because he inherited a very challenging situation. He's got a difficult problem to solve. And we have worked collaboratively with him, and he has been very collaborative with us and with the other unions. And we plan to continue to do that. Neither students nor their teachers caused the problem. Why should they bear the brunt of it? And why should parents have to be told that their children will have larger class sizes? They will go without some electives. I think this needs to be thought through a little more deeply to its conclusion. And I think that they can afford to cut more in the bureaucracy at central office.
That's Adam Urbanski talking to WXXI's Randy Gorbin this morning. Let's work backwards. He says, you can cut more at the bureaucracy. Start there. What do you say to that?
The numbers don't add up. So if you look at just the sheer number of administrators and what Dr. Urbanski termed bureaucracy, the numbers just don't add up. We cannot recoup the $35 million that remains after that $28 million just looking at administrators. It's not possible. The other piece that I will say is I've asked for feedback from this community at large for over a month now. We've overturned every single rock possible, looking at how do we make these cuts and reductions away from the classroom. We've examined every single scenario, and I made it clear on Tuesday that we're now at the point where we've done everything that we can outside of the classroom. Our budget is built primarily on personnel. Do the math. We're going to end up with needing to reduce staffing moving forward.
Listeners, as we talk to the superintendent of the Rochester City School District this hour about the future financial health of the Rochester City School District, you can join the conversation if you want to add thoughts, questions, etc. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@wxxi.org. Mr. Urbanski says that teachers and students didn't cause this problem and they ought not bear the brunt of it. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. Our teachers and students absolutely did not cause the problem that we're in. At the same time, we have an established budget for this school year. What I've done with my team is done an analysis of if all things remain constant, what would happen at the end of this year. At the end of this year, we would find ourselves in the hole to the tune of $30+ million if we don't act now. That is fiscally irresponsible. The state that we would be in of not cutting payroll and the like, if I were to allow that to continue, is a no-go. So I agree. Our teachers and students did not cause this problem. It's something I never thought that I would face as a superintendent, especially at this time of the year. We're literally making cuts while the school year is going on is an absolute nightmare for me. Looking forward to the 2021 budget, knowing what we're facing, I'm much more comfortable with that, with advanced planning and collaboration and communication with all of our stakeholders. But making these significant cuts in the middle of a year is extremely tough. Unfortunately, some tough decisions have to be made moving forward, and we all have to accept that as an entire RCSD community.
Adam did say that he has appreciated having the chance to meet with you, to have an ongoing dialogue, and that so far your tenure with him, it sounds like it's a productive relationship. I know there's always going to be debates among union leaders and executives. How is it going so far?
Dr. Urbanski's spot on. We have collaborated extensively with all of our union leaders. I would believe they would say to a person that there were no surprises leading up to the Tuesday conversation. The big surprise was the depth of reductions that we needed to make. That was always on the table in my conversations with our union leaders. They have every right and responsibility to advocate for their members. At the same time, I think they also understand the magnitude of what we're facing today. I've heard countless times that despite the long history of some of our leaders, they've never seen anything like what we're facing today.
Let me read a question from a listener named Diane on the subject of teaching staff. Would it be wrong to ask senior staff to take a pay cut to benefit students?
We looked at a variety of scenarios, and one of those being things like giving back furloughs and the like across the board. Unfortunately, due to the magnitude of what we're looking at, there wouldn't be that possibility to do that effectively across the board. So while that would contribute to our savings, it's just not going to be enough for us to get across the finish line.
Back in September when, as you say, when the news came out, for you first made aware of it September 19th, I think you said, and then in the ensuing 2 weeks, as you know, City Hall has made no secret of the mayor's desire to see either state intervention or something radical to deal with this. And at the time, late September, city spokesman Justin Roy told the Democrat and Chronicle that, you know, that the city continually felt in the dark, that the district was not making an effort to brief the mayor at the time. Have you been in touch with the mayor since then? What's your relationship like with the mayor?
So it's done nothing but improve in this time of crisis. Mayor Warren reached out to me and my team to offer support from her and her team. I immediately said yes. So we've been working with Mayor Warren and her budget team. We completely opened our books. We opened our thought process with regards to the budget reductions, the staffing implications. So they've been seated by our side along this entire journey. And we believe it's going to do nothing but benefit our great city moving forward, that there are no secrets. There's a complete transparency in our current state. That's necessary because we're all in this together.
Do you think we are past that portion of the public discourse that involved calls for a state takeover? Is that over now?
I don't think that that's gone away completely. I do think that this was a step in the right direction to show that when I say I'm a collaborative leader, I mean just that. When I came on your show earlier, I wanted to work with anyone who had a vested interest in our children. And Mayor Warren showed just that by reaching out to me directly and us working together to help solve this crisis that we're in. So while I can't speak for beyond my level, I know that my relationship with the city right now is exceptionally strong.
Let's be as specific as you can about teaching positions. So if there are 168 teaching positions cut, and again, we're sort of fast-forwarding here, but let's go ahead and say that there is a budget, and that's what it looks like in terms of the cuts to teaching staff. Do we yet know how much attrition, unfilled vacancies there are? In other words, roughly speaking, of those 168, what kind of numbers are we talking about, actual cuts versus attrition and unfilled?
Yeah, that's still too early. I do want to provide a brief explanation of why it's so tricky. So there's certain mandated services that we just would never be able to cut, things like special education. We have obligations around class size. We have existing vacancies that are in our schools filled by long-term subs. All of that is going to contribute to the equation at the end of the day. I haven't been able to look at what that trickle-down effect is going to be, while also maintaining legal obligations to seniority and the like. So my team's been hard at work for the past 48 hours really tackling just that. I'm looking at all different scenarios of what might that look like. One of the most frequently misunderstood is, while I'm trying to remain away from the classroom as much as possible, with a trickle-down effect, it's going to impact the classroom. So even if we're talking about teachers who aren't directly in front of students, with seniority in mind, there still could be an impact on our schools. My promise to the community is that we're still going to have a highly qualified teacher in front of all of our students in the RCSD. We're going to do everything possible not to disrupt their education for this year, because I still have absolutely grand aspirations and high expectations for this district. This will not be an excuse for not moving forward in the coming months, and we're going to continue to be even stronger as a family coming out on the other end.
Whatever the number ends up being of actual cuts to active teachers, what's the process like to decide which teachers?
Again, looking at seniority is something that we look at first. We also look at the different groups. So let's take an example, special education teachers. Even if we felt that we had to have a reduction in all staffing, there's certain legal mandates for providing services for our special education students that wouldn't be an automatic cut to a particular area. There's high need and critical areas that we just have a hard time filling, like bilingual educators and the like. So it's not an easy process. It's really looking at how do we make sure our students are getting what they need and not disrupting that, while also potentially increasing things like class size and the like in our schools.
Okay. A listener named Maya wants to know, sounds like the issue is charter schools. Why not cut more to charters? I think Maya is responding to your comments earlier that when previous budgets were being constructed, there was maybe an underaccounting of what students were moving into charters mm-hmm. versus an overaccounting of the need for teachers in non-charter schools. I don't know if that's an oversimplification. What would you say to Maya?
So to Maya, my promise as your superintendent is I want the RCSD to be the first choice and first priority for every family that lives in our great city. No longer will we see students in droves going to charter as the first option. My job is to increase the quality of schools that we have here so that we can accurately predict how many students are going to remain in the RCSD and how many will choose charter as their education. The most important part is that we do our research and our homework to make sure that we're budgeting accurately and looking at projections and historical trend data so that we're not under budgeting that cost to the district.
But in general, the tone of her email seems to be, well, just cut funding for charters anyway. And every community has its own debate about mm-hmm. charters. Do you think the balance with charters versus non-charters is appropriate? Is it where, because what you just said is eventually you want to see everyone choose RCSD, not necessarily a charter. Is that a knock against charter or is that something else?
No, I always will applaud charters for doing what they're supposed to do, and that's to provide a high-quality education and a choice for our students and families. That said, I will not sit by with the narrative that we're choosing charter because our CSD does not have the quality options for our families. So that's where I want to have an impact on this community. I know the debate at large nationally is should there be a cap on charter schools. And I think that we should engage in that conversation here in Rochester, just looking at impact on our entire community.
Here's what I wonder now, Mr. Superintendent. You are, given the newness you have to this community, you don't have to wear the mistakes that have been made before you. You came in and you inherited them. And the previous budget's got nothing to do with you. You did come into a situation that was probably worse and more messy than you were led to believe when you took the job. And I know you've told me previously that despite everything that's happened this year, you would never have turned away from this job. But here you are. Do you think your newness to the position will allow you to be more convincing, whether it's Adam Urbanski or any other leader who says, whoa, these cuts are harsh? Do you have sort of the freshness to say, I didn't create this problem, but I'm the one to tell you this is the only way? Do you think that will help you, give you an advantage?
I think so, for a few reasons. One, it's hard to instill confidence in the community if I was part of creating the budgets of past, and that is not the case. So bringing a fresh set of eyes and a fresh strategy to our budgeting practices with the promise that we will not be in this situation again under my tenure, I do believe will resonate with this community. The other piece that I think has potential to resonate is I've not deviated from my focus, and that's on our students and my desire to bring folks together. I think this is the ultimate challenge early on in my tenure. How do we remain as a one family during the most challenging times with our ultimate focus being on our students?
Well, after our only break of the hour, one of the issues that I'd like the superintendent to address is the question of whether this calculus will change if something changes with state funding. And I know some members of the school board have already said, let's crank up the advocacy. Let's see what else can change, especially in a state of what seems to be sort of a fiscal emergency in Rochester. So what does Superintendent Terry Dade say about that possibility? Would that change the calculus for possible needs for cuts or otherwise? He's joining us for the hour to discuss what he has put together in terms of looking for long-term solutions to the district's financial stress. Superintendent Terry Dade, and we'll take more of your feedback as well after this break. I'm Evan Dawson, host of Connections on WXXI. On Friday, you will hear continuing coverage of the impeachment hearings in Washington. A new witness is called to testify. You will hear all of the discussion and the questions. live on WXXI throughout the day. Please join us Friday, and Connections back with you on Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Superintendent Terry Dade, generous with his time with us, giving us the hour. The second time he's been on this program since he arrived in July, and making good on that promise to be accessible and answer questions. He knows this is going to be a debate. Before I jump to some more listener feedback, Mr. Superintendent, do you think you're at the point now where you feel like, absent, and we'll talk about the state in just a second, if there's a big state cranking up a funding, that might change the calculus, but absent that, if we get relatively status quo, do you feel like you've exhausted the possibilities, and that you would say anyone who tells you that we can do this without cutting some teaching staff is not giving you a complete picture?
That's absolutely accurate. I did not wake up one day and say that we need to go after staffing reductions. We have literally dealt with every single scenario away from the classroom as possible. I presented that $28 million on Tuesday, and unfortunately, with the hole that we're in right now, it is leading towards staffing reductions.
Well, our first phone call comes from someone you've probably met. Eamon Scanlon from the Children's Agenda is on the line with us. Go ahead, Eamon.
Hi, thanks for having me, Eamon. So my question, and something I'm hearing a lot from parents, and something I'm really concerned about, is what will be the public input process, not just for the crisis of closing the gap this year, but looking ahead to starting next year's budget for the 2021 year, because a lot of the fixes that have been proposed for this year are essentially one-time shots unless they're made permanent. And incorporating that and just the fact that costs go up every year, you know, we could be looking at $20 or $30 million that needs to be shaved in staffing cuts for next year. So as bad and as deep as the cuts are for this year, to balance this sort of one time with all these different sources, if you're not addressing sort of the underlying issues, or you're not making all these one time fixes permanent fixes, I'm really concerned about that gap, and wondering how parents in the community can be involved in having those tough conversations, looking for the long term.
All right, Eamon, hang there, and I'll let the superintendent address that. Go ahead, Mr. Superintendent.
Hi, Eamon. Great to hear from you. One of our next steps is looking forward to the 2021 year. We'll put out a timeline of how we're going to engage the community in a transparent process. I am absolutely going to keep this community focused on how do you establish the top priorities that we have as a Rochester family, and make sure that our budget aligns to those priorities. That means that we can't say yes to everything. It is really taking a look at our goals and our priorities and say, does every single thing that we're adding into our budget, given our fiscal constraints, align with our priorities? So I'm looking forward to that collaboration. We've shown evidence of that this year, despite the exceptionally accelerated timeframe. And we only hope to build on that as we look to the 2021 budget cycle.
All right, Eamon, you want to add one more point there?
Well, I guess any specific dates or avenues for parents to be looking out for, because I know there's a commitment to transparency, but if on this program there's a way parents could say this is the next step I could take.
So we will put out direct communication to the community at large. Unfortunately, I do not have that date right now, because unfortunately I'm also still dealing with the 18-19, 19-20 budget process. So I will make sure that our families and community receive those dates and how they can engage in the process ahead.
Eamon, thanks for the phone call. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Our guest for the hour is the Rochester City School District Superintendent Terry Dade, who released some of his strategies earlier this week for dealing with the long-term fiscal stress on the district. You probably heard this past September, a $30 million budget gap just for the current school year. And then the question is, going forward, what's that look like? Well, the superintendent says it's going to grow if changes aren't made based on projections, understanding revenues, and what it looks like in terms of possible cuts. And that does include the likelihood in the future, not for the current year, but in the future, of cutting a number of staff positions, including a number of possible teaching positions. Listener named Cliff says, you've acknowledged you got to right size. How about school closures? How do you make those decisions?
School closures are absolutely on the table, And I want to remind everyone that this is not a new conversation to Rochester City School District. When I was researching this position, I saw countless presentations about the need to look at enrollment, look at our buildings and usage. This needs to become a top priority for us to move forward, looking at transportation costs for transporting our students across the district and looking at number of enrollments for some of our schools. So that will be a community engagement process. We'll work with our city colleagues as well to make sure that that's a dialogue moving forward. But we will need to have school closings as one of our considerations for the beginning as early as the 2021 school year.
It is always emotional when there's talk of school closure for a lot of the obvious reasons, the comfort, the familiarity. Do you think most of the pain just comes from seeing something that might be a place where parents and their kids went closed down? Or do you think some of the backlash comes from thinking that the decisions are wrong or maybe some combination of those?
I think it's more the former, that there's an attachment. I'm overwhelmed with the pride that I hear from folks when they say they're a proud graduate of the RCSD, and then they immediately say which school or schools they attended. So I would say more the former. That said, we have a mobility rate in our city that is far above what we would typically see in a school system. So we're a quite transient population, so that familiarity and loyalty to a school isn't at the same level as some of our other areas across the state. That said, I also understand the emotion that can be tied to any school closure. So we'll make sure that everyone understands the process and can weigh in as we engage in those conversations in the months to come.
Anyone who just jumped into the conversation says, did I miss it? Are we closing school? No, there's no school closures at the zoo, unless you want to break any news. There's no superintendent announced school closures or even a plan for them. His point is, right now, everything's on the table. The district has fiscal stress that he didn't create, but he's trying to come in and help fix for the long term. And everything is on the table. So Nan writes to say, is the superintendent planning to cut or eliminate any of the smaller programs? As a retired district teacher, it would be a shame to lose schools like Rochester Early College. If our students have the greatest needs, it seems logical that the cost of educating them will be substantially higher.
So this is something that we can't look at it as individual programs. I'm really going to elevate us to a big picture look at the entire district and how do we meet the varied needs of all of our students. So I can't speak to individual programs now. It's far too early to engage in that detail. That said, we are looking at things like how recently was a building renovated? What is the student enrollment at particular buildings? What have been the outcomes of certain programs and initiatives of the district? What's our return on investment when we think of what we're offering in the district? While also layering on top of that there are significant budget constraints moving forward.
Okay, and Nan closes with this. Why can't Albany help more? Well, I want to read some of the comments made by a board member, Natalie Shepherd, who wrote earlier this week. She said, I've received many inboxes full of regards to budget cuts for Rochester City School District. And she says, annually, we're not getting enough money to cover increases in expenses, contractual and identified supports for students. This has been building up for years to the point that we now have to make tough cuts to make up for the negative balances we have accumulated. But here's the even bigger issue. If we don't get our state lobbying efforts to make sense logistically with all the systemic issues we are facing, then we will be in the same position time and time again. I don't question that people deserve to be fairly compensated. She's saying you got to get your Albany lobbying efforts together and convince the state, get more. Do you agree with Commissioner Shepherd?
I absolutely agree. And it was part of my presentation on Tuesday. After I spoke about the staffing reductions, my very next slide was we need to advocate for additional state funding. So there's no question that a system and a district with the challenges that Rochester faces, we absolutely need additional state funding. I will also make the point that I'm a it-is-what-it-is type thinker. So once we do all of our advocacy and lobbying and what have you, once the state has deemed that number going into the 2021 school year, it is incumbent upon us to spend within our means to adhere to a budget and not keep adding to it without cutting. So it is our responsibility to remain within whatever budget we're provided. So yes, lobby now, as I stated on Tuesday, I will begin that in the coming weeks. And once we've been provided with what our budget is going to be with on the revenue side, we absolutely have to maintain within and spend within our means.
Do you play this out for me? You go to Albany and they say, look, Mr. Superintendent, you want more. Buffalo wants more. Albany as a district wants more. Syracuse wants more. New York City wants more. We're tapped out here. We care about you. You already get a lot per pupil, which I know is a contention that a lot of people have. What's the argument you make to that?
So for me, when you think of equitable spending, you look at the case scenario of what will it take to make sure that every single student in the state of New York is receiving the highest quality education possible, looking at all factors that each district is facing. Right now, Rochester has the third highest child poverty rate in the entire nation. It's an easy advocacy platform for me to say, I understand my colleagues are asking for additional funding as well. I just ask for you to do your homework on Rochester City School District, what our students are facing each and every day with regards to challenges, a lot of the growth that we've made with regards to student achievement and graduation rates. And we need to do more to make sure that we're providing equitable funding in the true sense of equity, not equal share, but equity meaning providing the students who need it the most with the most funding.
Are you optimistic that that's going to come through from the state?
I am.
I am.
We've had great conversations with our legislature. I was part of a panel just a month ago with Shelley Mayer, just talking about how do we, with the funds that we have, how do we really adopt a formula that's really going to work for all of our districts, taking into account all of the various variables that each district has asked for, to make sure that our districts know what they're going to receive. And rather than falling short of what we promised, making sure that there's a guarantee of what each district's going to receive in the coming years. For me, that's what we need to build a reliable budget, knowing what we're going to get with regards to foundational aid from the state each and every year.
But it does sound like, as optimistic as you may be about seeing an increase, you are not going to simply assume that that is coming.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Again, I'm an extremely analytical thinker, so I always plan multiple scenarios out for the task ahead. So I will have a what if nothing additional comes forward, what happens with a bump this year, what happens with a bump coming in the 2021 school year.
Mary writes to say, why has there been such a lack of accurate communication with the new superintendent when he's been trying to make sense of this mess? And who, if anyone, will be held accountable for that? I think what Mary's saying is, how could you have taken this job and then been surprised to find out that you're $30 million behind just for 1920, let alone going forward?
So I really can't answer, why there's surprises. I do ask a lot of questions. So I know when I was sitting in September with this, wow, we overspent to the tune of $22.4 million last year. Immediately my head went to, I wonder what our 1920 budget looks like. So gathered my team together to say, I really need you to thoroughly plow through the 1920 budget because I will not allow this community to face this again under my tenure. So I do not want them waking up to this news in the 2021 school year.
Hmm. When it comes to mandates, you point out that there are certain things that you can't cut, that they are mandated. And when we talk to people who lead local government, in particular the current county executive, not so much the county executive-elect, but Ms. DeNolfo has talked a lot about unfunded mandates or stress that can place. Do you find that to be stressful, the mandates that you have? Do you wish things were different in that way?
I do wish that there was more of a conversation with regards to implementation of mandates. So we understand the reason behind a lot of mandates that come down, but we're not sure that there's all the dialogue necessary and needed to say, what does this mean, boots on the ground? How would we actually implement this across one of the largest school districts in the state of New York to make sure that we're, one, able to afford it, and two, that we implement it effectively?
Okay. Joanne in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, Joanne.
Hello, Evan and Mr. Dade. I am a city resident, and I have two children that graduated from the city school district. I've observed over my many years of being part of that system and living in the city that it seems like it's all about, it or it has been all about enriching the employees of the district. I love it, Mr. Dade, when you say it's all about the kids. It should be all about the kids. I love that because I think that's been missing for a long time. So my question is, now that the number of students that the district serves is less than it has been in a long time, shouldn't we be right-sizing administration for the district? And I'll take my listen off the air.
Okay. Thanks.
This is something I put as a top priority and something that I'm not shying away from, that knowing that personnel make up the vast majority of our operating budget, knowing that we've seen declining enrollment at a steady level over the past 17 years, the staffing should follow suit. So I've stated clearly that as we look at declining enrollment, we really have to take a hard look at our staffing practices, not only at the administrator level, but also at every personnel level for the district. It is not saying that our employees are not valuable. It is simply stating that run the numbers, understand how a budget is built, and when it's primarily personnel, you have to take a hard look at, are we utilizing our personnel in the most effective and budget friendly manner possible.
I want to just make sure before we get ready to close the program to clarify on Cliff's question from earlier regarding possible school closures. Let's just say, again, everything's on the table. There's nothing imminent. But in your experience, what's the best way for a community to decide which schools ought to be? Is it just about enrollment? Is that the main driver there?
So there's a few things this community really should engage in. One, look at the zones that were developed decades ago. We owe it to our community to have seats available per zone. So if I move into a neighborhood, I should be guaranteed a seat in the nearest elementary school, middle school, or high school possible. Two, looking at enrollment. Are we seeing an upper trend in enrollment, which is saying more and more families are selecting a school, or are we seeing declining enrollment? And then three, are we seeing our return on investment with regards to all of the money that we've poured into renovating and modernizing our buildings? Are we making sure that those new buildings are maximized with regards to student enrollment? So I think we have to look at that in its entirety and not as a school-by-school concept.
There's a number of community leaders who don't come on this program anymore. They think I'm unfair. So what are the questions that you're thrilled that I didn't ask this hour?
That is a great, great question. One, I'm very pleased that we aren't asking what's your thoughts on the Board of Education or Mayor Warren or this side or the other. I really remain consistent that I'm a collaborative leader that really wants to work
with. Well, I asked you about the mayor just in terms of communication and relationship building, and I think that's a fair question.
That was a fair question. Early on in my tenure, it was really, I felt like a lot of pitting one against another, not on this show, but in other arenas. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy to know that we did not really focus on this backwards look at who's to blame. I could have spent the entire hour trying to analyze and point fingers. It is really time for us to take stock of what our current situation is and move forward. So the longer we mire in negativity and looking backwards, it only misserves our community.
Yeah, as I stated, I didn't dwell on that question long. Mm-hmm. I do think this community needs to have good ways of evaluating leadership. They just had an election on the school board, mm-hmm. but I take the point that we're mm-hmm. moving forward now. Mm-hmm. And the question is, can you create a solution that will be lasting when it comes to the finances?
That's right.
So obviously the budget gap of $30 million in the current year was a surprise for you. Anything else that you've been surprised about, negative or positive, since you got here in July?
Not too many other surprises. This has been a complete surprise coming in with every indication that we had a balanced budget for the 19-20 school year. Something that I have been pleasantly surprised about is how much we've been able to galvanize this community around the great things that really do happen each and every day. So if you have any traction on Twitter and follow myself or our amazing teachers, you have evidence of all the amazing things that happen each and every day. So we have our challenges, but also exceptional things happening in the RCSD.
I live in the city of Rochester. I see kids with backpacks all the time, bumping to teachers. And I understand the community's frustration with the overarching problem, statistics, the numbers. But when I meet individual students and teachers, I feel the same way you do. Mm-hmm. I feel overwhelmingly positive because of the work they're putting in, and I'm glad you feel that way too, because I know it hasn't been the easiest transition for you, but I appreciate the time, and the listeners do as well, and I know we're going to talk to you again soon. That's Superintendent Terry Dade with the City of Rochester School District talking about his ideas that we're going to see start to take shape even more in the coming months regarding long-term district finances. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. I appreciate it.
You got it. Our thanks to the entire team today. Thanks, Molly, for volunteering today. And Megan Mack is the producer of Connections. And Rob Braden is the engineer who does so much for us to make us sound good and keep us on the air in a beautiful way. Also, thanks to Frank for volunteering as well today, the entire team. We are going to be back with you tomorrow, depending on what goes on in Washington with impeachment hearings. But you will hear anything with impeachment live. So depends on what happens in Washington. But either way, tomorrow, Monday, we'll talk to you again on Member Supported Public Radio.